Hello, everyone. Welcome to Toonami Therapy. Today, on November 11th of 2021, I'm Michael.
I'm Tommy, and for the last time, I'm 36 years old, because tomorrow is my 37th birthday.
Okay. Congratulations. You are 1 year closer to death.
Or just like Jerry Seinfeld said, you know, why do they celebrate birthdays? You made it through the year without dying.
He's got a point. Yeah, I just remember this one comic I saw where there's this kid and he's like getting out of bed. And he's all happy. He goes, "It's my birthday!" And then it cuts to like the Grim Reaper, and he just kind of moves this. You know those like things you often see at, and he just kind of like makes this extra tally or something or erases something.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it was something like that. Okay. So we're back to Toonami after not having Toonami for a bit. We've got two episodes of My Hero Academia to start out with. We've got episodes 112 and 113, the end of season 5. So now that we're here, what's been happening? So basically what happens is this is a problem. We've got two episodes. I'm trying to remember. Wait, what happened here and what happened before that? Right. Okay. So basically what we've done is that is Shigaraki, you know, the head of the League of Villains guys, manages to win. He beats Redestro, and Redestro's like, "Well, you seem like I like your ideas and I would like to subscribe to your newsletter." So he decides you're the new leader of my group, and everyone is apparently totally okay with that, even though Shigaraki ended up killing a bunch of the guys in their group in the fight. So, but now he's got an actual real army now on his side. So that's the big thing there. After we end up, Also, he ends up being told about by the, I can't remember his name, so I'm just going to call him Dr. Robotnik. He gets told by Dr. Robotnik, "Hey, I'll do something that'll be super painful to you, but it'll make you super powerful." And he's like, "Okay." And then finally, we do get to see a bit of the important characters. It reinforces to us again that Deku is the Avatar. As seen from Avatar The Last Airbender, because I realized, so it's not just the fact that his power is passed down from generation to generation and gets, or the fact that he's able to commune with his sort of past selves. He's also the only person who gets multiple quirks. Because you never saw Avatar The Last Airbender, but basically you have firebenders, earthbenders, waterbenders, and airbenders, and the Avatar is the only one that can bend all four of them. So Deku's like, "I can use all these powers from the previous people who had my quirk." So yeah, he is the Avatar. And then he also goes on berserk when they awaken. That happened in that series also.
Wow.
I made jokes about it, like, "Oh, Deku's the Avatar," but I really am wondering at this point, like, did the author watch that show? Was that an inspiration? Anyway, so that's My Hero Academia. End of this season, and then it sets up for the big battle between the heroes and the villains, which Shigaraki has decided to rename because he realized League of Villains is a kind of stupid name. Now they're the Paranormal Liberation Front.
Yeah.
So I thought as far as season endings go, this was decent enough.
Yeah, I just feel kind of like what we were promised in the beginning of the show, at the beginning of every episode, that this was the story of how Deku became the world's greatest hero. And I feel like we are no closer now than we were at the first season of him becoming the world's greatest hero. So they need to work on that. They need to at least make some strides toward doing that, because otherwise it just doesn't have the direction necessary to make me interested in it. But I will say those villains were pretty entertaining, so I don't mind them getting some screen time. But yeah, overall, pretty good season, I would say. Not bad. So
The weakest part was the opening arc, where we just basically had the kids compete against each other in some kind of repetitive matches.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens in the next one. This was a decent season. In case anyone's curious, if you want to jump onto the manga where this left off, start on chapter 258. And it's actually especially sad to see My Hero Academia go, because I'm realizing we're kind of really running out of stuff on Toonami that I particularly like.
We're running out of stuff on Toonami, period.
Because Black Clover's done with. Now My Hero Academia is finished with. They've got Yashahime, but we've already seen all the episodes.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a show that we were so gung-ho about that we want to watch it all dubbed again. We've got Food Wars, but that's kind of been less interesting. Although I seem to remember the ending of this season is pretty good. Although the last season people didn't really like. So then I'm looking at all that. It's like, what's left? I really hope the new show they're going to start airing this week is good.
Yeah, and no more JoJo, thanks to its rights getting thought out. And that means we won't ever get JoJo back on Toonami. At least not for now. So that would be one I'd be hoping to see a lot if JoJo was coming back. But yeah.
They apparently will. So next week they've got two episodes of their new Blade Runner show. After that goes to one episode, and then they're showing two episodes of Yashahime. I'm not sure if that's just for that week or if that's going to be the new schedule. Although that's not the worst thing, because it means they'll get through the first season faster, and then it'll get to the second season and we can start watching stuff we haven't seen.
Yeah.
That would be nice. That would give me, that would be something to watch.
Yeah, that would. I've been trying to avoid all spoilers, and I've been successful so far. So hopefully I can keep it up.
Okay. Yeah, we'll see about that. All right. So after that, then we move on to Food Wars episode 70.
Yeah. So basically, the only thing that really happens in this episode is that they get tired of doing this whole food war with each other. So they say, let's hurry up and get this thing over with. So Erina's grandfather decides to do some really, well, it is stupid, but it may not end up as stupid, but it was a stupid idea to just make the entire war come down to 2-on-2 with Soma and Erina going up against two of their people, you know, the girl, what's her name?
Rindo.
Yeah. And the guy.
I can't remember. Wait, is it Tsukasa? I think it's Tsukasa.
Yeah. So basically it's like, let's just make everything come down to one battle, which if this was real life, that would probably be a really dumb idea, but we know better than that. So yeah, it just felt like a wasted episode. It felt like this could have been done a lot faster. and we could move on faster to the whole, training part, I guess, if you call it that. But yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah, and then they're about to actually start up the thing, the 2-on-2 at the end. Yeah, it really does feel like, well, I don't know if it's a matter of wanting to rush to the end. I think it's probably more a matter, story-wise, it probably is more interesting to have Soma and Erina working together against Rindo and Tsukasa rather than doing it separate. And plus, that way, but yeah, it did kind of have the feel of, we're bored with this. Let's just get to the end.
Yeah, it reminded me of Sword Art Online, where we got to the 75th out of 100 floors, and then all of a sudden Kirito's like, let's just end this thing right now. And they have the big final battle, and we never find out what was on those top 25 floors, which was one of the many disappointing things about Sword Art Online, the first season.
Yeah, I didn't necessarily, I remember when that happened, I didn't mind it so much. It was because I thought a bunch of the, I remember, let's see, way back when that happened, you sent me all these questions, like, why was this happen? Why did he do this? Like, all, and I like was, and for a bunch of them, I was trying to offer answers. For one of them, some of them, I'm like, yeah, I think we'll have that explained to us later on. They were never explained to us.
Yeah. Whenever that happened, I was just, I went ballistic. I was like, why are we ending the show like three quarters of the way in? That frustrated me to no end. But that was back whenever when I was in the mindset that SAO was going to be a good show. So I had it in my mind, like, okay, I want to like this thing, so why is it so stupid right now?
well, they had to get it over with quickly, because then they needed to have that extra, because they really needed that second arc in there that involved that really weird fan service scene with Asuna and the tentacles later on.
Yeah.
You had to get in that. You also had to, and the other weird stuff in that arc.
Mm-hmm.
So we got those. Then we actually watched Naruto for once. Naruto, yes. Episode 361. Naruto Shippuden episode 361. Which is filler, but it's actually okay filler. It basically is some stuff showing, like it's this flashback thing of Kakashi, and it's basically just before the stuff that happened shortly before he met Naruto and Sakura and Sasuke for the first time. And such. And then there's a flashback within that flashback. I remember that. Really, the episode is just kind of going over, it's just kind of seeing the first, I can't remember exactly when these events happened in the anime. I think it was like episodes 3, 4, and 5. It's kind of showing those episodes, but from Kakashi's perspective, which actually...
And in high definition.
Yeah. And it was interesting, not only because we saw from his perspective, but because we, with a bunch of the information, and well, also from an out-of-universe perspective, there's a bunch of stuff about Kakashi and Naruto and other characters that the author presumably hadn't thought of at that point, but later did, and that was kind of integrating to it. So yeah, it's actually was an interesting thing to show us those things with the benefit of hindsight and from Kakashi's perspective. So as far as filler episodes go, I thought this was actually pretty good.
I thought so too. It was really playing on nostalgia, you know, remembering those early moments. And you know, everything about them was different. You didn't have Naruto going, believe it, and stuff. So, but yeah, I thought that was actually very entertaining. I'm glad we stayed up for that.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's actually probably a good thing, this one, because this was part of, I think, a filler arc, and it was about some stuff about, like, Kakashi when he was in the Anbu. You know, those guys who always wear the masks and are basically useless.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it was smart to get out of it. You don't want to be in that group.
Yeah.
So let me see. Okay, so this mostly was covering, it looks like, episodes from Kakashi's perspective, what was going on in episodes 3, 4, and 5. I can't remember if that's what the episodes I said, but I was at least close.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so yeah, we got that. So actually, this is a minor thing, but one I especially remembered is that part where Naruto sets up that prank so that the eraser falls on Kakashi's head. And in this one, we do clearly see, yes, Kakashi totally saw it coming, but just thought, eh, whatever. That's such a small thing, but that might have been my favorite for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's it for our Toonami stuff. Then we're on to Fate Zero, episode 12? Yes. So, this episode is almost entirely talking. Most of it between, what's his name? I can never, what's his, the guy who had Assassin. Anyway, it's mostly him talking with Archer, although we do get some stuff with Saber and Iris Veal and such. But, yeah, mostly it's really just Archer talking with Kirie, that's his name, and doing a bunch of psychoanalysis of him.
Yeah. I really like this show, but sometimes it feels like we're just having conversations about everything. I guess it's conversation in community. And I feel like we could be doing something more exciting than this. So, I didn't like this episode as much. I think Iris Veal is my favorite character, which I didn't expect whenever the show started. I didn't expect that. But, hopefully we get to another battle soon, because I like watching Saber battle with an invisible sword. It makes for good television, you know?
Yeah. One of my reaction was, wow, and I thought the last episode had a lot of talking.
Yeah.
it reminds, almost kind of like, I'd say it's a little, it reminds me of Death Note, but like I said, most of this episode is two characters just talking to each other.
Right.
Whereas Death Note usually had a little more, like that tennis game between Light and L, where they're just completely analyzing everything to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man. You know, that was the episode that actually got me into Death Note. Because I didn't really like the first episodes, but then once Light and L actually met, it got so much more interesting.
Yeah, that was back in the golden age of anime, where I liked it from the very start. So,
I think, well, I might have tried it out more earlier. So here's my problem. So my brother was like trying to tell me, watch Death Note. No, read Death Note. I think the anime wasn't even out yet. And I'm like, oh, well, okay. He's saying, come on, look, just read the first chapter. You'll be absolutely hooked. And I read the first chapter. I'm like, no, I don't really like this that much. And so I just kind of quit. And only much later did I happen to see that episode I mentioned, which got me interested. In it, I still am not that interested. Don't think it was that interesting until Light and L actually met. That was a point where it really took off, because the series was so much about the battle between them, which is why the second half of it is not about the battle between them. Okay. So after that, we move on to. Let's see. Am I on the right episode? 86, episode 8. So we find out, we find out the confirmation of, yep, basically the Spearhead Squadron, the whole goal is just to send the 86 people who actually survived the fight scene and then send them into impossible missions so they all die anyway. And then she's like, you know, trying to get help from people, and they all tell her no. to kind of an extreme extent, like the I can't remember his name, the sort of higher her uncle, that was it, who basically tells her, no, we got to get rid of all of them, because otherwise other countries will find out about what's going, how badly we've been treating them, and this way only a few people will know. And and my reaction is, wait, there are other countries in this universe? Was that ever actually said before? They haven't been mentioned. Lena ends up being really depressed about all of it, especially because the remaining five people in the 86, you know, who are coincidentally the exact five that you see in the, like, in the first poster for the series. What a coinky dink. End up going on the what's presumably essentially what's supposed to be essentially a suicide mission. And we also do find out that, because we had that stuff with Shin's brother and how, like, the Legion, the robot stuff, absorb people, so they absorbed him or something, and he's all. And so he's actually, or some weird version of him is controlling them. It's like, yes, I am going to protect my brother after I tried to strangle him for, I don't know, but it made for a extremely dramatic scene. So that was the episode, which I didn't really care for that much on the whole.
Yeah, It just been so depressing lately that I've considered dropping it, though you're telling me that I should hang on just a little longer.
I did, both because of what you were telling me about what you thought of the series and the fact that I was wondering, okay, does it actually go somewhere other than this? I did watch a few more episodes, and I don't know if it'll, like, suddenly make you interested or anything, but it definitely does become less dark. Although, I'll be honest, with this episode, I thought some parts of it were so over the top, I didn't, like, find it depressing or anything. I thought it was kind of funny. How over the top some of, like, the attempts to, like, be dark and gritty were. I would recommend at least trying out a few more, at least the next episode, if nothing else. This was definitely not a very good episode, and that was 86. I guess we'll move on. All right. So then, going from a dark and gritty and really, like, gritty war series, we go to And You Thought There Is Never a Girl Online, episode 4.
Yeah, this one a lot different than 86, that's for sure. Unfortunately, I'm having a hard time remembering what happened. I know I watched it. Could you refresh my memory, please?
Okay, yeah. This episode was kind of a weird blur. So they're playing their game and they decide to try the mystery box feature also, which means that, so they decide, let's try out loot boxes. And not to anyone's surprise, they don't get anything good out of them.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's, I cannot remember people's names in this series. I always have trouble remembering names of characters if they're Japanese names, because they all like blur together for me. But like the girl who doesn't want it to be known that you know she's into the games and such. Her like friend like finds her at that sort of computer game club thing, and she just kind of tries to get her out and make her say, "No, I'm not actually part of it, really." They meet up with some new player to the game, which Rusian, whose first name I can't remember because everyone calls him Rusian. Helps out, but then that makes Akko get jealous of them. So that's the main stuff that happens this episode.
Yeah, I found it to be good, but not all that interesting. It was like I enjoyed it, but you know, I didn't remember it very well because it felt like, you know, just another episode. And hopefully we get more on the whole. I enjoyed the thing with Akko trying to figure out how to get her back to normal life. And I kind of find it funny in an unintentional way. But this episode was good, but just not very memorable.
What's weird is that in this episode, so the point is, we formed this club. It will help Akko get more normal. And both in this and the teacher says, it seems like she's actually getting worse. And I'm pretty sure someone pointed that out in a previous episode also. And then everyone's just like, eh.
Yeah, and you pointed this out a while back, but I have to mention it. Like, you see the world of the game makes you think it's like a Sword Art Online type of thing, but whenever you actually see them playing the game, they're using the mouse to move characters around on this really crude thing, and it's like, what is going on? Are they? I don't understand this video game. Is it a Sword Art Online type of, you know, dive in, you know, virtual reality thing, or are they just imagining all these conversations they're having with each other in the game? You know.
The way it looks Sword Art Online is definitely imagination. In terms of the conversations, I assume we're supposed to think that's the case, they're communicating in text and we're supposed to be saying, oh, well, that's what they're typing. And then in this sort of imagination version, they actually say it out loud, which come to think of it, is typing in a game like this seems like it would be pretty inefficient. Do they not? Because I don't think they use actual. No, they don't. You don't use a microphone or whatever to talk in the game. That's why that's how you didn't know some of the character. Like that's how the character says, "Oh, I'm a guy in real life," but then it's really a woman.
Yeah.
One other thing that I want. That reminded me of something I noted. Because there's a part where. Okay, I need to look up the characters' names because I cannot remember. I remember them. Let's see. Okay, Akane, that's her name. She's gushing about how advanced the computers they're playing on at school are, and it has to be told, no, they're property of the school. You can't take them home. And I'm thinking, okay, maybe things are different in Japan, but we did not get top of the line computers at my school.
Don't understand why they would think that you'd be able to take home a computer from school, you know?
Like, all the computers I remember as having at school were all kind of old stuff because, you know, they didn't, because, you know, they cost money, so they only got new ones when they really had to. So I'm like, oh, man, so do they make sure to shell out for top of the line computers in Japan or what? Mm-hmm. I don't know. But yeah, let's see. Yeah, we got that one. Okay. So that's all of our stuff. And then we're going to, I guess it's time for our discussion on Evangelion, or do you want us to do the usual top three stuff first or after Evangelion?
Yeah, top three now. This is a tough one for me. Tough.
I can go. For me, first place, this might surprise you. This probably is higher than it deserved, but whatever. I really liked it. Naruto Shippuden. I'm surprised, but we watch it so infrequently, I feel like I should boost it up a little, just to be sure. Then My Hero Academia, and then Fate Zero, which, despite my complaints of it being a bunch of talking, still was interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my top one will also be Naruto, and my second place will be And You Fought. And third place will be Fate Zero.
Okay. Yeah, And You Thought was fourth. I considered putting it, but I'm like, man, I don't know. I did like the Fate Zero, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. So, we watched Rebuild of Evangelion 4.0. Well, actually, it's 3.0 plus 1. So... is the technical name for some reason, which is called Thrice Upon a Time.
Have you figured out what that means yet?
I guess it means that they thought, Once Upon a Time is overused, and there's already a movie called Twice Upon a Time, so let's call it Thrice Upon a Time. Or... was that a rhetorical question, or do you actually know the answer?
No, I'm okay. Clueless.
Yeah, it's weird. It breaks with the naming convention of the previous ones, which were always that you cannot blankety blank, like you are not alone, you cannot advance, you cannot redo. This movie, how do I summarize it? So Shinji spends a bunch of time with, so we have an action sequence at the start that I didn't really understand who they were fighting, what they were fighting or anything, but, it goes a while without another action sequence. So I guess they had to do it. Then it's just about Shinji and, Rei and Asuka just being at this sort of village place, and we meet some of the characters we knew from before who are now 17 years old. Was it 13 years have gone by? I can't remember. You know, you see Toji and some of the other ones who are adults now. So we get some stuff there. Then eventually it moves back to the sort of fight. Oh yeah, and Rey, whoever, who just keeps being called Miss Lookalike because she's not the original Rey.
Mm-hmm.
And she like just she turns into orange juice because she dies. Yeah, it's so weird that that's what LCL looks like, but
Tang.
Yeah, Tang. That's a better way to say it. That's a funnier way. So anyway, but then they have to go and stop Gendo from doing his thing. So they go and they fight and a bunch of stuff happens. There's a lot of like times where they randomly drop a bunch of like Judeo-Christian phrases without any explanations. Like, Gendo is apparently, like, able to withstand being shot because he used the key of Nebuchadnezzar. It is not explained what that is, how it works, or anything at all. He just has it, and it makes that. So then they end up going through the stuff. Shinji and... This is so hard to explain, but the point is they end up going because they're trying to how do I even explain this when I'm not confused about what happened myself? Basically, they Shinji and Gendo end up in this sort of weird alternate world or whatever, the anti-universe, I think they call it, and Gendo's like, okay, now I'm going to give you my backstory. Well, my life was bad, and then Yui, and but then I fell in love with Yui, and it was great, so then she died, and I felt angry, so I decided to do all this crazy stuff to try to bring her back, but I guess it didn't work. Whoops. Shinji ends up, like, I guess, he like, erases all the Evas somehow, and everyone goes and everything turns back to normal. Then we kind of cut to, I don't know, some time later. And everything, like I said, has kind of gone back to normal. And apparently in one of the most random romantic developments ever, he and Mari are together. And that's the movie, and I know that was very, very disjointed and confusing. It was a confusing movie throughout much of it.
Yeah, the thing at the end with Mari and Shinji getting together was probably the most disappointing and worst part of the movie. Not that I don't like the room. I just don't understand where that came out of. Like, I don't understand why Mari would fall in love with Shinji based on the events of the movies. It doesn't make any sense. So that felt forced. Now, while that did feel forced, like, I don't know. I guess I kind of wanted him to end up with Rey, but there's a lot of complication with that. But then it's like Rey, there is a Rey, and she's with Karu, and that kind of doesn't make any sense either. And
well, we don't necessarily know if they were actually romantically involved. We just see them standing talking to each other. So But I guess that's the implication, if nothing else.
Yeah, it wasn't by accident, you know?
Yeah.
They didn't just accidentally put those two in a scene together, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, I really liked that opening battle, even though I didn't know why they were battling, who they were battling, what they were battling. I just thought that was such a cool visual of all of France being like red with all the LCL and then the Eiffel Tower being used as a weapon. I thought that was a very effective way to start the movie. That That was a good start. And then I did like the whole life in the new world type of thing where you see Kensuke and Toji and Class Rep, and they are living their new lives. And it was like, you know, I was like, this is pretty enjoying.
That was like probably my favorite part of the movie.
It was like, we could make a movie out or a show out of this, you know? And, so I enjoyed that. And then Ray's head blew up, and then everything kind of went nuts. And I guess I had a problem. Something didn't seem right about Asuka still being 14 years old. I just felt like her character, it just doesn't make much sense. So, like, yeah, I don't know. Sorry, I had a distraction in here for a minute. I guess they, for the plot's sake, they had to stay a 14 years old. It just didn't seem right in the big scheme of things. So that was confusing. Then eventually, you see, we don't have, we never get any explanation on what Sele, or however you pronounce that, what they were doing all this time, because they were behind the whole human instrumentality project, but they didn't have reason for doing it. It isn't like they wanted to be with their, I mean, maybe they did. They wanted to be with their dead wives, and that's why they orchestrated a world-ending project. But I never really find that out. Plus, it seems backward to me, because I thought in the original Evangelion that, like, Yui kind of sacrificed her life in order to be put into the Eva, and that happened after Second Impact. So what was Second Impact about then? So, you know, that, so that didn't make any sense to me. At least it was a happy ending, which, you know, I know it's cliche, but I'd rather have a happy ending than Shinji sitting on a folding chair for half an hour.
Or strangling Asuka.
Yeah. That, you know, I still maintain that was a good movie. But so overall, I did like it. I think it was probably the best since, well, it's better than episode 3. That's for sure. Better than the third one. I'm not sure if it's better than 1 or 2, but I did like it. So I bet if I went onto my animelist.com right now, I'd probably find those two movies very close to each other, and this one would be right there with them. But episode 3 would be not so good.
Yeah, it was definitely better than the previous one, but I do think it had a number of flaws. The opening battle, I mean, it was kind of cool. I just wish I knew at all why they were fighting about anything. And I'm checking my anime list. So this one has the order of highest to lowest. This one is the highest ranked of the movies. It's 8.69. The second is after that at 8.33, then the first at 8.03, and then the third is the lowest at 7.61.
That's pretty significant.
Yeah, especially the fact that you need, when you come to like second seasons and stuff, usually those get a little inflated because the people who wouldn't have liked it abandoned the series in like the first season or after the first movie. So that tends to often mean like later seasons get higher marks. So if you're in the third movie and it's a decrease, and you know, then it's usually a sign, oh wow, that really wasn't that good.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing is there's so many things where they just say stuff and nothing is explained. Like I mentioned the key of Nebuchadnezzar. So here's another thing. There's a part where, I can't remember his name. The guy who, you know, was always like an assisting Gendo, the older guy.
Uyutsuki.
Yeah, maybe that was it. Where he meets with Mari and he like refers to, he like says like, what does he say? He says, or should I say Mary Iscariot? And then she like says, huh, I haven't been called that name in a long time. And I'm like, what does that mean? Why did she ever have that name? It's never stated like again. It's just a random biblical reference or Judeo-Christian reference, because there's a bunch of like references to stuff that's not, you know, in the Bible, but is like, you know, in like, you know, like Jewish like folklore or
right. Yeah.
Or like apocryphal texts. So but yeah, it was just such a random thing to say that with no explanation. Was that like some code name she had previously? And that's what's annoying when you have stuff like that, because like, so the original series had a bunch of like, you know, kind of gratuitous, like biblical references or whatever, but they made sense. They were explained in the universe, like, okay, so they have the Magi computer system. All right. So it's a computer system and there's like three computers in it and that stuff. That makes sense. I get it. It's not just randomly called that. And then there's never any reference again to it. Whereas here you have stuff like that and then it's just dropped and never mentioned again.
Mm-hmm.
There's a weird part where like they refer to like the Book of Life and, being like names being written in it. And here's what the Evangelion Wiki says in its entry for it. And this is basically it. The Book of Life is mentioned by Kawaru Nagisa twice and thrice upon a time. First to Shinji, second to Kaji. That's it. That's apparently all we know about it. It was mentioned by him.
Yeah.
And it's not even specifically that they're like Judeo-Christian references. It's the fact that if they were something different, like if instead of like Mary Iscariot, she had said something like, oh, it's you, Mary, who had a little lamb. That would have, or any other random Mary, or like, oh, it's you, Mary Sue. Actually, I'm pretty sure people have accused her of being that, so.
Yeah.
I didn't, but whatever name he had said there, it still would have had the problem that's just mentioned with no explanation. It kind of feels like they just decided, well, we're not going to explain this, so let's just make it a random biblical reference so that maybe the Japanese audience will just think, oh, that must be a reference to something. Whereas all the Westerners will be like, what does that have to do with anything?
Yeah. It's like she hasn't been called that for a long time. Like, that doesn't really make any sense, especially given that she's supposedly still just 14 years old. Like, what? That didn't make sense.
The other weird thing I had was, so we have, like, Miss Lookalike, you know, just dies because she was defective or something and couldn't live outside of Nerve. And then, but then, what was the point of having her around at all? She didn't do anything. like I just assumed that that she would have like somehow she would have like she would eventually like fuse with the original Rey, and then Rey would have all the memories of that one, so that, you know, there would be a point to that. But we never get that. Like, this new Rey just dies, and then later on we get the original Rey
back. Yeah, that doesn't make much sense, because we had that character development with her. She was learning words, learning accents, learning behaviors, and then she just blows up, and that's it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're totally right about that. I forgot about that. That is a real weakness of this movie, because it's kind of like the episode of Survivor a couple of weeks ago, where everything that happened for no reason at all, because on Survivor, what they did is they had whoever won the immunity challenge now lost it. And so basically the challenge was for no reason at all. But in this case, it's like Rey learning all this stuff, how to interact and, you know, becoming a better person, and then her head explodes, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's, and like I said, I was sure that that's what we were going to do. The two Reys would merge, and thus she'd have all those memories and stuff, and thus it would have a point, but that just doesn't happen. That's the problem. Uh-huh. So, yeah, I just feel on the whole, this movie, like I said, it's about 2.5 hours long. I think a lot of that could, because so much of it was just really confusing stuff. I feel like that could have definitely been dropped down a bit, or maybe replaced some of that with a bit more of an explanation of things.
Uh-huh.
But it does, there are some things that justifies better. It does, like last movie I said, well, why did you even bother with a 14-year time skip? I'm like, okay, so you could do some of this stuff. This was actually kind of interesting.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, let's see. I think there were two other things I had to comment on. One is, there's a part where it mentions explicitly that Kaworu has just been, like, resetting things. Like, when Shinji, at the point where Shinji goes into the anti-universe or whatever and meets with him, and it's stated that he's been resetting stuff to try to make Shinji happier, something, and, you know, then he gets told, well, you weren't doing it for Shinji, you were just doing it because you wanted him to make you happy, when Kaji tells him that, or I don't know if it's supposed to be the actual Kaji or whatever, but, and then that was just making me think, are we supposed to believe that the original series, the original continuity, was among those reset? Like, that was a reset, and then we had a bunch more until we got to this one, and this was the final of, like, them? Or, because, I don't know, am I reading too much into that? I'm not sure if I'm supposed to see this as resetting that, or just in, like, a reboot in the sense of, oh, this is just some alternate continuity entirely.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It kind of reminds me of Monica Magica in a way. But, yeah, I couldn't tell you either way on that.
Okay. The other thing I wanted to mention was, I kind of feel like Shinji getting with Mari was a matter of, well, I mean, you got some people who wanted to be with Rey, and some people wanted to be with Asuka. So, if we get whichever way we go with those, we'll annoy one of those groups. So, let's compromise and do it with Mari so that they both, so that no one's satisfied. Who I do think is a character that I wish still had gotten a bit more development. She really does just come across too much as, oh, she's another Asuka, which is, you know, okay. I mean, she was entertaining. I just wish there had been a little more that we had learned about her.
By the way, did we ever figure out why she would always call Asuka Your Highness or Princess?
I don't know. I think she just gives nicknames to people. It's like when she did the same thing to Shinji when she calls him Doggy or whatever it was. Yeah. So I get, yeah, but I guess if you're someone who wanted Shinji to end up with Asuka, well, I mean, you've got the Angelic Days manga. It happens there.
Mm-hmm.
Although that's like a high school AU one that's based on like a video game called Girlfriend of Steel. I don't know if there's some spinoff where he ends up with Ray. I mean, I know there's some games where he can end up with a bunch of people, including, wasn't there some video game where he can end up with a bunch of different characters, including, I think, Kaji?
Well, it wasn't like he really ended up with Kaji, but it was like, it was considered the Kaji route because Kaji played a big role in it, and there's like an entirely alternate ending to Evangelion in the Kaji route, but it was never like Kaji and Shinji like got together.
Okay. Okay, because yeah. That would seem very kind of creepy.
Yeah.
That would seem, well, more than kind of, but still. Yeah. So there's that. Let's see. Any final things? Yeah, the ending being happier was very nice. Last time I said that the ending was the important thing, to give people a more fulfilling ending than we previously had. And I will say this did do that. This was, there was a manga adaptation of Neon Genesis Evangelion, and it mostly followed the anime. I mean, there were some changes, like Toji, you know, he didn't get like really injured. He just straight up died in the manga, which actually makes some more sense considering he didn't do anything afterwards in the anime anyway, so might as well kill him off.
Mm-hmm.
But, and then it follows end of Evangelion for the most part, but then it switches up the ending so that Shinji, I don't know the specifics, but he kind of like resets reality so that there weren't angel attacks or something like that. So this is not exactly, I don't know all the specifics, but this movie kind is more akin to that ending. So, yeah, so the ending's good. I just wish it had been a little, the road there had been better. And it does, and so yeah, I'm kind of, what on the whole did you think of the film series, the whole rebuild?
I thought that 1, 2, and 4 were good, and 3 was dreadful.
Yeah. Yeah, those were kind of my overall thoughts. The fourth one, I just have so many conflicting opinions on it. But the fact that I did like the ending, and I did really like the sort of more slice of life stuff outside of Ray just randomly dying. But even there, the problem was he didn't do anything with it afterwards, not specifically the fact she died.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it fulfills that. I just kind of wish some parts of it had been a little more better and less rushed so that you could have something that's really a contender to the TV series, because as it is, it's still a matter of, well, you can watch a TV series and then you kind of get disappointed. Well, and then you kind of get disappointed by the ending. Then you watch End of Evangelion and, well, you might like it, you might not like it. It depends. And then if you want to finally get a happy ending out of all of it, well, watch these movies, and which for the most part were not as good as the show, although even if the ending is better. So it's all just kind of a mix, a weird mix, kind of like how the live action Death Note movies, not the Netflix one, the Japanese ones, there were like two of them, had a better ending than the manga did, but the movies themselves otherwise were not as good as the manga. So it's a matter where the best of both worlds would be, well, if the manga just had this ending of those movies, but You have to keep them separate is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. I think I'm exhausted all the stuff I was going to say. Did you have any else to say about it?
No, I just think it was a good ending, and I'm happy we got it. And mm-hmm. I'm very happy I wasn't waiting for 9 years
yeah.
after seeing number three, because it's able to get the bad taste out of my mouth with number three within, you know, a week. So that was pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, definitely was a good thing we put off watching the third one for so long in retrospect. All right, so that's been our end of Evangelion, rebuild of Evangelion discussion. So, yeah, now that we're done with that, we're going to kind of, at least for a while, not be drop watching movies.
Yeah, just for now.
Yeah. There might be some stuff. I mean, like, depending on how we feel at the end of Unlimited Blade Works, we might decide to check out Heaven's Feel, but that'll be a ways away.
Yeah.
Okay. So with all that said, I guess we can just wrap things up now. Wow, we did not go as long as I thought we might, but then again, I guess we had less stuff to talk about on Toonami.
Mm-hmm.
So this has been Toonami Therapy. Our episodes are put up on toonamitherapy.podbean.com for now, and we usually get them up on Friday, sometimes Saturday. And if next week we'll be back with everything else. The usual. Let me just like myself. Right, we've got the regular Toonami lineup minus My Hero Academia, but we'll have two episodes of that new show, which I'm really hoping we'll like more than Fena.
Mm-hmm.
Although Fena, at least, you know, the middle of it I didn't care for much, but that ending was so insane, it's kind of endeared itself to me. All right. So with all of that rambling said, we'll see you next week.
Bye.